Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 24th of November. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about gay marriage. I don't know if you saw the essay in Newsweek this week, and it was pretty interesting. We had hoped and we promoted the fact that the author of the piece would be with us, but he couldn't be. Nonetheless, I would like to start the hour with a little bit of what he had to say. It's titled, How Getting Married Made Me an Activist. This week, Newsweek editor wrote an essay about his wedding and how it put him in the middle of the culture wars. And now, as he and his spouse wait to see if their marriage is valid, they wonder if history will be on their side. He writes to David Jefferson that is, Proposition 8 has changed my life. Just 1 month ago, when it looked like the gay marriage ban was winning support in my home state, California, I turned to my partner of 7 years and told him we'd better say I do before California voters tell us you can't. And so they had a wedding on October 25th. And now he and his partner, Jeff, and 18,000 couples like them wait to see if their marriages will be remaining valid. There is a good chance that they will be challenged in court by proponents of Proposition 8, which changed the Constitution in the state of California to read only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. The judge who married them was of the opinion that the wedding would stand since ex post facto laws are illegal under Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. We're going to be talking about all of this this hour of the program. And, of course, Proposition 8 has resulted in large demonstrations, proponents of gay marriage all over the country. We'll talk about this issue. We'll have two guests with us, starting with John Davidson, who's legal director at Lambda Legal, the oldest and largest national legal organization committed to achieving full recognition of the civil rights of lesbians, gay men, bisexuals, transgender people, and people with HIV. He has won legal victories ranging from protecting the rights of LGBT students to helping secure asylum for people who are persecuted in their home countries to stopping HIV-related discrimination. We'll be welcoming phone calls on this issue. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, that's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Let's start with this question that was asked, that David Jefferson asked in the Newsweek piece, whether or not the marriages, his recent marriage and 18,000 others in California, will be valid.
Well, we believe that they are valid, and the Attorney General of the State of California agrees with us. When the California Supreme Court this last week agreed to hear our challenge to Proposition 8, they said that they specifically wanted us to address that issue, so it will be taken up before the California Supreme Court. They've set a briefing schedule, and they expect that they could hear this case as early as March. So we will be getting an answer sometime this coming year from them. But as a general matter, initiatives, changes to the state constitution are not retroactive unless they expressly say that they are. This one didn't, so there's a presumption against it being treated as retroactive. And we think there are many good arguments about why it shouldn't be treated as retroactive. The people didn't understand that they were doing that, who voted for the measure, and people acted in reliance on a belief that they were indeed getting married, and it would be incredibly unfair to basically divorce people against their will.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't read that analysis of it. Tell me why you think this passed in California.
Well, the other side from us really told a lot of lies. There's no other way of explaining it. They their ads, which were plastered all over the airwaves, claimed that somehow this measure would result in things about same-sex couples getting married being taught in elementary school and somehow convincing kids that it was okay not only for gay people to get married but for children to marry people of the same sex. And so it was directly appealing to anti-gay sentiment that somehow children shouldn't know anything about gay people, and that somehow if they did, they would turn gay, and that would be a terrible thing. But mm-hmm. that was their primary appeal. They also started suggesting that somehow churches would lose their tax-exempt status if they refused to perform marriages for same-sex couples, and that's an absolute lie. Churches have an absolute freedom to decide who they want to perform weddings for and who not. Many churches will not perform ceremonies for people who don't abide by their own religious beliefs. A Catholic priest will not perform a wedding for somebody who's divorced. An Orthodox rabbi will not perform an interfaith marriage. And no one has ever thought that that was challengeable in court.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry.
No, so basically they campaigned on those lies and I think directly appealed to people who have fears about homosexuality generally.
Mm-hmm. And when you say they, who are the people who are funding these campaigns?
Well, the largest funding from the studies that have been done came from members of the Church of Latter-day Saints. The Mormon Church, not that it directly gave money, but the leaders in the church told members of the church that it was very important that they all give sizable amounts to the campaign to pass Proposition 8. The Knights of Columbus, Catholic men's group, gave over $1 million as well. So we saw funding primarily coming from religious groups and more conservative members of more conservative churches.
Mm-hmm. And those opposed to Proposition 8, an equally large television ad campaign?
Yes, each side spent over $37 million.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding me.
This was the largest funded campaign on a social issue ever in the United States history.
Huh.
The airwaves were full. But I think the other side was able to somehow define the issue as not being about marriage, but instead being about children and churches.
Mm-hmm. When was it that Newsweek essay makes reference to the time in California? I can't remember what the proposition was or the legal thing about making sure that there were no gay teachers in California, and Ronald Reagan comes to the rescue on this.
Yeah, that was Proposition 6, and that was 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
Right.
So, I'm sorry.
And that measure, originally the people thought it was going to pass, but Reagan, who was governor at the time, did come out in opposition to it a month before and was part of the ad campaign against it. Now, Governor Schwarzenegger in California also came out against Proposition 8, but was not very vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other side, they also were able to do a number of other quite misleading things. They sent out flyers to largely African-American communities with a picture of President-elect Obama on the cover of the flyers with a quote from him that he believed marriage should be a man and a woman. Although he said that, he also came out strongly in opposition to Proposition 8, saying that he thought it was kind of the old divisive politics, and that, though that was his personal belief, he didn't think that Proposition 8 should pass, that it was up to individuals about who they should be allowed to marry or not.
Mm-hmm. As a result of this vote, John, we have seen very large demonstrations all over the country. Tell me about the activism that has happened as a result of, well, it happened prior, I'm sure, to Proposition 8, too, but now the demonstrations are everywhere.
Yeah, I think this really touched off a nerve, not only in California but around the country, that a place that is seen as liberal in California
right.
would nonetheless not only reject the ability of same-sex couples to get married, but take away a right that had been given. You know, it's one thing to feel like you're fighting to get something, but when you thought you already had it, and then people are eliminating a right that you have, I think that causes people to have a stronger emotional reaction. And I think also people had thought the measure was going to be defeated, and then when it passed, there was a lot of anger about that, a lot of kind of surprise and shock that led to people feeling like, well, maybe they hadn't done enough and maybe they hadn't let other people know how important it was that they be treated equally. And so they've taken to the streets to express their feelings about how important equality is in all things, including marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen an unprecedented number of demonstrations in California, 20,000 people showing up in San Diego, which is a kind of more conservative city in California, and really in cities throughout California. And then we've seen it spread to around the country.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that well, everybody says that the younger generation has very different attitudes about gay marriage than people who are quite a bit older. They don't even see this as a controversial issue. Would you agree with that? And does it portend that gay marriage will be fairly commonplace in the not too distant future? If so, when? And will it also mean a big struggle to have it happen?
Yeah, those under 30 poll is almost 2-1 in support of allowing same-sex couples to marry. Whereas if you look at people over 65, they're the groups most opposed to allowing same-sex couples to marry. So we definitely see a generation gap on this issue. And it does seem that over time, again, we're seeing greater support for marriage equality. I think that will mean that we will see that the freedom of same-sex couples to marry will be accepted in this country in the not-so-distant future, not just in Massachusetts and Connecticut, where it's now legal, but we'll see that spreading across the country. We see that as people learn more about the issue and learn why marriage is important for same-sex couples and their children, what it brings to them, that they start to rethink kind of what's been a knee-jerk reaction that, like, oh, no, I've always been taught that marriage is between a man and a woman. And they start to wonder, well, who's hurt by allowing same-sex couples to get married? And they understand that those couples and their children are definitely hurt by being excluded from the institution.
Mm-hmm. And how are they hurt?
Well, they're denied, first of all, equal treatment. They're told, basically, your relationship is not the same and not entitled to the same respect, and your family is not entitled to be treated the same way. And so that has definitely a deprivation of dignity to those people and kind of a telling of them that they're really second-class citizens. But they're excluded from hundreds of, if not thousands, of state law rights and over 1,000 federal law rights. So they're excluded from things like favorable tax treatment, from the ability to make decisions for loved ones when they're in the hospital or otherwise incapacitated, from all sorts of protections in court, protections generally dealing with the government, access to various kinds of benefits from employers. There are an incredible number of ways in which people are benefited by being able to be treated as married. We have a case going on right now in Iowa that's going to be heard by the Iowa Supreme Court on December 9th, and we've looked at the law in Iowa. There are 540 different laws in Iowa that provide some advantageous treatment to people who are married. Mm. And so same-sex couples and their kids are being denied all of those very concrete benefits right now.
Mm-hmm. We take phone calls for our guests, and we'll take them in just a moment. A couple lines are open if you'd like to join us. Our number is 800-486-8655. John Davidson is our guest, legal director for Lambda Legal. We're looking at Proposition 8, which passed in California, but a gay marriage is happening in Connecticut, so we're at kind of a crossroads on this issue. We're looking at why it was passed in California, where we are nationally with this issue, and welcoming your phone calls, and why we're seeing very large demonstrations all over the country in favor of gay marriage, why particularly conservative religious groups are extremely concerned about this and are funding the opposition to gay marriage. And here's how you reach us. Whoops, there go the phones. 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, and we start with Tony from Athens. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Thanks for the guest and the show.
Sure.
I'd just like to make the comment of disappointment in President-elect Obama's position on opposing Prop 8 but saying he's against gay marriage. This political hair-splitting is nothing more to me than pandering to, like, these decrepit bigotry and homophobia that exist in this country. And that's what he's doing, and it's incredibly disappointing because his campaign is supposed to represent transcendence and civil rights and hope and progress, and it's the same old, you know, political garbage and what he's pandering to. It's really bigotry and homophobia, and I can't wait for my own generation, you know, 30 and under, to lead a national campaign to promote equal rights for all people as part of a federal constitutional amendment to get rid of this state-by-state discrimination.
John?
Well, I think a lot of us were disappointed in Obama's statements about this. Michelle Obama's actually been much more supportive, and I do wonder sometimes if it's kind of a campaign reality that a lot of politicians are willing to show leadership on this particular issue. He has stated that his mind is more open about it, but he's just not there yet. So we're still hopeful that as he thinks more about the issue, he may come around and be more supportive.
And thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Carmen from Seneca.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Hi. I just want to say that I think we need to move beyond gay marriage and marriage between men and women and single people in terms of the benefits that people are entitled to, because as a single person by choice, I, too, am denied a lot of benefits that married people get in regards to taxes, et cetera. So I would like to see our culture just move beyond all of that and treat everybody equally as far as entitlements go. And I will take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Carmen.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of ways in which we do privilege marriage, and I think some serious questions have been raised about whether a number of those should be made available to people in other sorts of relationships who are not married. But I think we've seen that marriage actually is helpful for society. It provides someone else who will be responsible for taking care of someone in times of need, and that it brings stability that is good for families. Now, I think there are a lot of ways in which we need to examine whether everyone's being treated fairly and question certain things, like why health care is dependent upon frequently being in a relationship with somebody who has a job that provides coverage for family members and instead of having a system where everyone gets health care. So there's a lot to be reexamined. But I think what we've seen is that marriage does provide a lot of benefits, and so long as we are providing those benefits, no one should be excluded from them based on things like their race or their religion or their sexual orientation.
Would you say, we talked about the Mormon church here, would you say David Jefferson in his essay described what transpired in California as only the latest skirmish in a three-decade battle between the religious right and the gay community, a part of the culture wars? Would you say that's where the battle is here, and one side really is the religious right? And I guess the question would be, if that's the case, what do you do about that?
Well, I think the biggest and most well-funded of the opponents have definitely been from the religious right, from evangelicals, from the Mormon Church, the Catholics, Orthodox Jews, and Baptists. I mean, those have been the primary groups that have funded campaigns and that have been most vocal. But I don't think they're the only ones. I think that there are people who, again, we've seen kind of seniors and people who've grown up in more conservative parts of the country are just less familiar with gay people or have attitudes of not feeling comfortable dealing with sexual orientation-related issues. what do we do about it? I think that the best thing we can do about it is to educate people, is to try to address what their fears are, what their concerns are, and get them to understand that they're talking not just about abstract issues, but about real people. And so I think the most important thing to do is for people to talk about the issues, for people who are gay or lesbian to talk to their family members and friends and neighbors and coworkers and explain why it's an important issue to them, and try to take on what is it that people are concerned about. Why do they think some people should be treated differently when it comes to their ability to get married? How will their own marriages be affected? Why do they think this is a problem? And why are they trying to deprive other people of the ability to get married and to enjoy that ability to express your love and have your relationship sanctified by the state, have it approved and honored and treated equally to other people's relationships.
Mm-hmm. Bo is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Bo.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just worried that the thing is that the institution of marriage goes back, you know, to the beginning of history. And, you know, being a Christian, we believe that it was created by God and that he set certain rules out. And the time that we're in right now seems to, you know, the day we're in seems to want to pervert different things that God has set in rule, you know, his, you know, what he set, you know. And it's like, I don't have a problem with homosexuals, you know. A talk show host I listen to, you know, on the pretty much in the morning is like bisexual, and I have a couple of bisexual friends. But the point is that the institution of marriage, that's what people are worried about, of the history and about perverting it. You know, I'm like a politically liberal and socially conservative, I guess you could say. I'm kind of split, you know, but the benefits and all of that, you know, because a lot of people, you know, who are homosexual believe they are born that way. And, you know, I'm thinking that the majority of the people who voted that way believe that it's a choice. You know, as well as I, to be homosexual. So, basically, I wouldn't consider it to be like a... Sorry, that's my truck. To be like a civil right, but more of a choice that one person would take to live a lifestyle. You know, I choose to be a Christian. I choose this lifestyle.
Okay, let's get a response, John.
Well, a couple things. You know, it's interesting when people talk about the history of marriage. I think frequently they haven't spent a lot of time looking back at the history of marriage. And people say, well, in the Bible it says marriage is between a man and a woman. If you actually look at it, what a lot of the Bible talks about is marriage being between a man and a woman and a woman and a woman and a woman. That is, a lot of the Bible talking about actually polygamy, which was practiced widely at the time that the Bible was written, and
by the Mormons, we might add.
Right, but yeah. But so marriage has gone through a lot of changes. In fact, also at biblical times, marriage was a relationship where basically the husband controlled everything about the wife. She was forced to take his name. He got to control all of her property, to make all decisions, and we've seen a lot of changes in the institution of marriage. So it's simply not true that it's always been the way it is now. And I think the question is, well, what do we want it to be? Not as a religious matter. People are allowed to believe what they ever want to believe, and churches are allowed to do whatever they want with respect to marriage. The question is, in our civil institution, in what our laws are, should people be treated differently or not? And religions don't get to dictate that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is about people who believe that somehow homosexuality is a choice. I'm not sure why. I never understand why they think homosexuality is a choice, but somehow their heterosexuality isn't a choice.
Mm.
It's like, well, when did they decide to be heterosexual, and why do they think somebody else made a choice in a different way?
Mm.
You know, it is a thing. The studies that have shown is that when sexual orientation is set very early in life, and that it's very difficult, if not impossible, to change it, any more than it would be easy for someone who's heterosexual to suddenly one day say, you know what, I think from now on in, I'll just be sexually attracted to people of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something people have volitional control over. And that's part of the reason why it's wrong to treat people differently, because it's not something that they can readily change. And I just wonder, when people who say it's a choice, what leads them to believe that?
All right, we'll take it. Do you have time for a couple more phone calls? Or?
Sure.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Bo, for your call. Let's go next to Tom from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. The No-Name study says that all men are bisexual by nature, biology, and God's plan for man, and even goes as far as to say that it was actually same sexuality 50,000 years ago. They created the bonding and civilization that was able to foster religion, by the way. I'm from Burlington here, and the Mormons are from Burlington. The White River is one of the places where the Book of Mormon was written. And one of the tenets of the faith is King Strang, when a couple got married, the minister was supposed to sleep with the bride on honeymoon night. And King Strang was going to do that, and the brother of one of the groom said, no, you're not going to do that. And so then King Strang had him ride through town naked in a buckboard. This is up in Beaver Island, and the group of Mormons that went there. And so then the brother shot King Strang, and he came back here to Burlington, and he died, and he's buried here in the Burlington Cemetery. And we have a road here called Mormon Road. And 100 years ago, the Mormons were considered a cult, and they were thrown out of every place pretty much they went. Some went to Utah. But what I wanted to point out is something about why the African-American community is so against gay people, or so homophobic. And one of the things is, it goes back 400 years ago when slavery started. Black slaves were allowed to have their own churches, but they were not allowed to have their own minister. They always had to have a white minister. And that minister gave the rules, whatever the master wanted. And it was an economic reason to keep males from sleeping together, because that way you don't make any more black slave babies. And so then eventually the blacks got their own ministers, and now they keep preaching the same doctrine.
All right, let me hold you there, Tom. We have a lot of calls. What do you think, John?
Well, the caller said a number
of right.
interesting things. I wasn't aware of the study that he referenced. I would just say that that I think there's been a lot of kind of blame cast about kind of what do, quote, African Americans believe. And I think, like any group, there's a variety of beliefs within any group. And although the exit polls showed a large number of African Americans having voted for Proposition 8, more recent studies of it have shown that it wasn't that much out of proportion. It was about 57% of African Americans who said that they actually voted in favor of Prop 8. That's slightly higher, but there are other groups where it was much higher. Again, as I indicated before, people over 65 overwhelmingly voted for Prop 8. If you look at people who go to church more than once a week, they overwhelmingly voted in favor of Prop 8. So I think it's not very helpful to kind of cast this in racial terms. I do think that we saw a number of African-American church leaders who were exhorting their congregations to vote in favor of the measure. And,
mm-hmm.
and so we have seen a lot of church leadership take that position. But there are lots of African-Americans who are very supportive of gay rights, and including there are lots of African-Americans who are themselves gay or lesbian.
No. Am I wrong in thinking that it would be somewhat a given that oppressed people would have some kind of understanding of other people who have been oppressed? You think that would hold true? I guess not.
I think people frequently expect that, but I think if you look at the kind of history of waves of immigration to the United States, it frequently has been the people who've kind of were the last oppressed group, once they make it, frequently want to close the door after them. So you saw a group of Irish and Italians who were immigrants at one point, as soon as they became more accepted, were among those who were strongly opposed to racial integration. We saw Jews, and I'm Jewish, who again kind of made it also having a history of being opposed to equal treatment of African Americans. We've seen then in Los Angeles before the civil unrest that happened after the Rodney King trial, big splits between the Korean American community and the African American community. Mm-hmm. And so it's not the case that people who themselves have experienced discrimination recently are automatically accepting of equality for other groups, unfortunately.
Kathleen is next from Green Bay. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, good morning. I really would like to thank our guest for his excellent information that he is giving to people, because I'm the mother of a gay son, and I stood in the Thomas Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., and I sobbed because we are supposed to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all of our citizens, as our founding fathers have written, and my son does not have that. I supported Prop 8 even though I'm in Wisconsin, because it really will make a better life for my son. The fact that we have, I think our guest pointed out that I really don't believe a lot of people are homophobic. I believe they're homo hesitant. They just don't know people that are gay. And as he said, please get to know my son before you cast judgment about him. Get to know him as a person. I think sometimes, too, that the religious right is absolutely bullying everybody to be the way they are, and that's not respecting diversity in our country. And I do have a belief, because I do work with young people and teacher training in the state of Wisconsin here, that the acceptance with the younger high school people of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered students is becoming enormous. Mm-hmm. And when that tidal wave hits and the kids understand that voting is power, that I really believe that this will come. It's a generational thing. But as a mom, it hurts deeply to have people say the things they do about gays and lesbians.
John?
Well, I would say that the caller's son is lucky to have such an understanding mom. It's really mm-hmm. nice to hear that, and to hear someone standing up for their child in that way. I do think that she's right that we see younger people having much less problem with this, and I think part of that's because a lot of them grew up kind of having a different exposure to who gay people really are, and that therefore their understanding is not based on stereotypes and not based on a kind of lack of understanding that fills in all sorts of myths about gay people. They grew up seeing Ellen on TV and listening to Melissa Etheridge and Elton John and seeing Rosie O'Donnell and kind of having it humanized who gay people really are. Mm-hmm. And that's made a big difference.
Yeah. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks. You as well. John Davidson, legal director of Lambda Legal. We're staying with the same conversation, just changing guests here, so your phone calls will still be applicable to the next conversation. It will be with Glenn Carlson, who is executive director of Fair Wisconsin. He is former president of the same organization, former president of the Fair Wisconsin Education Fund Board. Our number remaining, 800-486-8655. Our email the same, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about gay marriage this hour of the program, with a number of demonstrations in favor of gay marriage actually increasing all over the country as a result of Proposition 8, which has many people in California and elsewhere concerned. We started the conversation talking about whether or not the 18,000 couples who have already been married in California would have their marriages end up, whether or not they'd be valid, or essentially would the state be saying you're now divorced. So we talked about that. And we're looking, continue to look at whether or not gay marriage will be pretty much accepted, considering the generation gap on people's feelings about this issue? Will it be completely accepted pretty soon in this country? We're joined right now by our next guest, Glenn Carlson, who's executive director of Fair Wisconsin and former president of the Fair Wisconsin Education Fund Board. Glenn, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what do you think? Will gay marriage be pretty much accepted in this country 5 years from now? Or will it take will it not be? And the third part of the question is whether or not it will take a lot of demonstrations for it to be accepted.
Well, I don't know if 5 years is the time frame, but I do think that, you know, the time is definitely on our side. Process of coming out, Barney Frank, congressman from Massachusetts, really said it best. He said, by the process of coming out, we have helped America understand that they were not anti-gay. They just thought they were supposed to be. And I think that that's the case. And the younger people, like your prior guest pointed out, grow up with gay people. And I think we see over and over again that the biggest determinant, more so than the number of times people go to church, the number of groups that they belong to that are opposed to gay marriage, the biggest determinant is how many people they know who are gay.
Mm. You would think by now most people would know people who are gay because people have come out, and it's not at all uncommon for people to have members of the family who are gay, friends who are gay. You would think that almost everybody would know somebody who's gay, if not a couple people by now.
You would think so.
Right.
But I think maybe in urban areas that may be more true.
Hmm.
But polling that we did a couple of years ago when we had our own gay marriage amendment on the ballot, we asked people, do you know anybody who's gay? And this is in the state of Wisconsin. We had roughly half of the population saying they did not know anyone.
Really?
Who was gay.
Did you really? That's
yeah.
Amazing to me.
It was amazing to me too.
What does that mean? Why? What does that mean?
Well, I think it's a couple things. One is I think that there are probably more gay people in urban areas. I think maybe people in rural areas who are gay are more reluctant to come out. And so, in fact, I think that these people that we're asking who say they don't know any gay people just don't know that they're gay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the challenges that we have is to encourage people and encourage people in the African-American community and in the Latino community and in the rural communities and in the Mormon church and in the Catholic church to come out in their communities so that people know them and know what their lives are about.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to phone calls. We have tons of them. Lynn is next from Eau Claire. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the wrong one. Here we go. Lynn is next from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. My husband and I are in the car listening to the broadcast, and our theory is that it is more natural for human beings to be bisexual, and that perhaps people are put off or afraid of homosexuals because they are, in fact, afraid of their own bisexuality.
Glenn?
Perhaps. Yeah?
No. I was just trying to get a response from Glenn. And
well,
Glenn?
Yes, I think that there's something to that. And I think that what we often see is that internalized homophobia is perhaps worst among people who are repressing their own desires and using that as a psychological defense against confronting that issue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lynn, for the call. Let's go to an email. Brian from Lafarge. I hope the gay community isn't going to hammer the new president over this issue like they did Bill Clinton. Clinton tried to end discrimination in the military and was somewhat successful. The gay community gave him heck because he wasn't able to provide total equality for gays and lesbians right then and there. He expended much political capital on that issue with not much appreciation in return.
Well, I don't, I think that the president-elect has made it quite clear that his number one priority is the economy. And I think that most gay people, like most Americans, are glad that that's where his focus is going to be. I think he's going to be much more open-minded than President Clinton was, And we also have to remember that this is now 16 years later from when President Clinton tried to take on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell prohibition.
Thank you, Lynn, very much for the call. Matt is next from Middleton. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hello.
I think that there's two different points that people who are for Proposition 8 are worried about. The first being that if equal rights, quote-unquote, for gay people to be married is legalized, that the ability for religious institutions and those other institutions and people who do not feel comfortable because of religious beliefs with that type of lifestyle will be forced either to close their doors, such as an adoption agency. There are many Catholic adoption agencies who will not place children from Catholic parents with gay couples because we do not approve of that particular lifestyle, whether or not it's acceptable or not. We're afraid that if this is legalized, we will be forced against our religious beliefs to either close our doors or to do things that violate the tenets of our religion. And I think that's a very real possibility because you already see lawsuits like that in Massachusetts, and hospitals and adoption agencies are either being forced to violate the law, close their doors, or violate their principles. And I think that that is an untenable environment. I also think that the institution of marriage from a state side isn't necessarily about equality as much as it is about maintaining the population and maintaining a stable base for the country. We see in Europe, every country in Western Europe, the population is going down. And we see incentives for only heterosexual couples to have children, to bring up the population base. Otherwise, the countries are dying. And I think that's the primary goal of what marriage is, not necessarily for equality. Because even if equality is granted, as far as allowing gay couples to marry, they're never going to get the type of acceptance from religious groups and others who will not accept that type of lifestyle, whether it's legal at the state or not. And I think that's the type of acceptance that gay people are looking for. Because if they weren't, they would be happy just living with each other and forgetting what society has to say.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, there's certainly a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't argue with anyone's religious beliefs. I think that where we run into problems is when we have the separation of church and state crossed, and that I further don't believe that that the idea that marriage is to raise children, it would seem that then if you're not able to have children, that you perhaps the caller is suggesting you shouldn't be able to get married. I think that it's not about acceptance of our relationships or our sexuality, but it is about equal rights, and that gay people have families too. Gay people have children. Why should their children not have two parents that can go to parent-teacher conference and only one? What if there's a divorce? What happens to the child? I think that, part of the institution of marriage is to protect children. And I think that gay people have children, too.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Paula from La Crosse. Hi, Paula.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd just like to comment on my own life. I'm 65 years old. I'm a widow. My husband and I were married for 35 years. We had six children, and we adopted two of them. They were two black children from Wyoming. I now have 12 grandchildren, and I don't understand where the marriage should be between a man and a woman. I guess that's a religious view, and I don't agree with it. I think if you're lesbian or gay couple, you should be allowed the same rights as a heterosexual couple, and I have many gay and lesbian friends over the years, and they're just as nice and kind as anybody else, and they have a right to the same rights as heterosexual couples. So you can adopt children and have these views, and they'll grow up just fine. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
I think it's wonderful to have 12 grandchildren, so congratulations on that. I have nothing to disagree with. I will point out, Kathleen, I did have a chance to look at the poll we did 2 years ago, and it is definitely age-related on people. You know, do you happen to have any friends, neighbors, coworkers, or family members who are gay, lesbian, or homosexual? Among people who are 18 to 29, and this is in Wisconsin, 62% said yes. Among people 65 and older, 65% said no.
Oh, my. Isn't that interesting? They just don't know, do they? They just don't know.
I think that they may know them, but they don't know that they know them.
Exactly, exactly. We haven't talked about this at all, but this is an interesting thing that happened as well, which says something about all of us. 57% of voters in Arkansas in the last election supported a measure to prohibit unmarried sexual partners from adopting children or from serving as foster parents, even though there's this huge need and they could be wonderful foster parents. The measure specifies that prohibition applies to opposite sex as well as same-sex couples.
I'm just appalled by this. We have just actually done another poll here recently in Wisconsin that shows that the attitudes of Wisconsin voters are not as extreme as those in Arkansas. And in fact, on the question of would you support adoption by same-sex couples, we had 47% say no and 46% say yes.
That's interesting. Paula, thanks very much for your call. And let us go next to Charlie from Wausau. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Charlie.
There's been some talk on the show about how the debate has to do with whether homosexuals are born that way. And, you know, honestly, I don't know. I think maybe they are. I am a Christian, and I actually think that I was born a drug addict, or at least with the, you know, they say that you can inherit that. My parents and my family members have that same issue. But the Bible says that we're all born with sin, and that if we want to be born again, we need to follow and give our life to Christ, and that as we walk with Him, He'll free us from that. And I know for me, you know, how can I say this? For me, giving up drugs and even sexual things that weren't godly, it was very difficult, and it took a lot of time. But I knew that's not what God wanted, and He brought me through that. But as far as being born with it, yeah, I think that homosexuals probably are born that way, but it's not what God desires.
You think it's a sin?
Yeah, yeah.
Glenn?
Well, we disagree on that point. Mm-hmm. I don't see the wreckage in people's lives from being in loving relationships, whether they're same gender or opposite gender. The world needs more love. I don't think necessarily that we need, you know, more drug addicts. And so I, you know, commend you for turning your life around and appreciate that you do understand that this is something that most likely is genetic.
Thanks for the call, Louise. We have about a minute left, everybody, from Spring Green. Hi, Louise.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have one suggestion. Let's separate church and state and put our own proposition in that says all marriages are religious, and every couple that wants the benefits, whether they're heterosexual or homosexual, bisexual, I don't care what sexual, because the state has no business dealing with that issue, can be registered in a civil union. And you can choose to be married in a civil union and not a religious You can choose a religious without a civil, but you don't get the bennies.
I think that's a great idea. Unfortunately, that's not the playing field that we have right now. And so given the playing field that we have right now, which is where the state is deeply involved in marriage, it should be afforded to everyone equally.
Glenn, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your time today. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Our guest this half hour, Glenn Carlson, who's executive director of FAIR Wisconsin. He is a former president of the FAIR Wisconsin Education Fund Board. Thanks for all of your calls, everybody. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Rhonda and Rob Schroeder, who's just joined us today. We welcome him to the show that we do. And thank you, everybody, for all of your calls. We appreciate them. We'll be with you again tomorrow from 9 until 11, talking about big issues of the day and having interesting conversations. News ahead from National Public Radio, and then many hours of great conversation, so just stay with us. I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's a minute now before 11 o'clock for this Monday, the 24th of November. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.